in December. I retired in December.
Is that because you wanted to, or Morris
wanted to? No, Morris wanted me to retire. Morris wanted me to retire.
How did you feel, Lottie? You, I remember you mentioning when, like, the first time you got married to Saul, that you kind of missed working when you quit and, you know, you started having children and stuff. You know, there were things about having a job that you really missed. How did you feel in terms of that and about retiring?
How I felt when Sal was alive?
No. Oh, how did you feel when you finally retired? Did you feel the same? Did you miss work? Or?
Well, when I retired with Morris, I was always with Morris. Morris wanted me to be with him all the time. Wherever he went, he didn't go without me, nowhere. Wherever he went, he took me along. If he was invited for dinner from the union or from any place, he had an invitation for me too. If he was going to a meeting, he took me along. Wherever he went, he loved my company and I loved his company. We never missed each other. I always went with him.
So were you happy? Did that replace work for you?
Yeah, I was very happy, especially when I got into the retired center. See, the retired center was organized a few months before, I think about 6 months before. And they didn't have too many people. And Joey said to him, and Pilly said to him, Morris, this is your baby, and I want you to do all you can to get people in. You know a lot of people. You know everybody. Get them in any way you want it, but just get the people in. That was Joyce wanted from him and Finley. And when I retired, we were on the telephone, and we went to visit people, and we talked to them, and we told them about the medical center and about the insurance and about this and about that, and they should come to the center. And we got a good response. We got an awful lot of people in, and then we had all kind of amusements. We had lectures and we had classes. Miss Simon was brought in by us from the beginning, and we had other teachers. We had art teachers, we had crocheting, we had, and the people, to that too, we had to call. I was on the telephone, Joyce told me, Lottie, do everything you want. I entertained many times for people in the house, I entertained, just to bring them closer. And many people told me, you know, Lottie, if not for you, I would have never been here. I would never do this, and I would never do that. A lot of people told me that. And we managed to get people not only from Chicago, from wherever they were, from the suburbs even people. My telephone calls were sometimes $30-$40 a month.
Did Morris retire when you were married too, or had he retired earlier?
He had retired when his wife died. He took sick, and he retired. And you know
what position was he in then?
In the beginning,
he was a steward when you first met him.
When I met him, he was a steward. And then he became a business agent, like they have now, Foster and Hildebrand.
Yeah, yeah.
And he worked with the Hildebrand's two uncles. But he was the head of them. Morris was the head of them.
Uh-huh.
And he had Morris Spitzer work as a business agent. And then Hildebrand's two uncles. And then one retired and one went away. He took in Hildebrand. Hildebrand was a nephew of Rothbard's. They were two brothers. And when Spitzer went to Detroit, he took one Rothbard to Detroit to work.
He was still a business agent?
Morris was a manager at that time.
Of the Chicago?
Of Detroit Joint Board. He was a manager. But he also was the head of Chicago. Without Morris, they didn't do anything.
But he wasn't officially the head of Chicago. He was officially the head of Chicago,
but he managed Detroit chapter, managing offices. He managed.
He was the. Well, I don't understand about the head of Chicago. President of the joint board.
No. The head of the business agents.
Okay.
The business agents never did anything. He left them for the whole week. He used to leave on Tuesday to Detroit and come back, I believe, Thursday night. He used to come back.
And did he stay as manager in Detroit until he retired?
Yeah. Okay. But prior to Detroit, they used to send him to all over the country to organize offices, amalgamated offices. He was in California, in San Francisco. He organized the office, organized shops, and then he used to go further. They used to send him further. The 25 years later, the last 25 years he was in Detroit, but prior to that, they used to send him on, the Hillman used to send him to organize shops, to organize offices, St. Louis, Milwaukee, all over the country, even Canada. They send him in for a few months. He used to stay a few months in Canada, a few months in Los Angeles, sometimes a year, and to organize the shops, to establish an office, put in another man in there, and go further. Wherever they needed him, Hillman used to send him. See? So he had a big share in the amalgamated. And then they wanted him, Hillman wanted him to come to New York to take over the laundry. But Morris was established here, he was a big man here, and he had the amalgamated here and all over, and the family was small, and he couldn't travel all around, all over. So he used to take for a few months vacation, he used to take them to Canada, he used to take them to Los Angeles for a few months, the family, and then they came back. But they broke up a home several times, they broke up their home.
Lottie, what was Morris's appeal to all these women? Was it because he was a big union man? I mean, if they were active in the Amalgamated, was it important that they
wanted friendship? Yeah, I'll tell you. Morris was an honest man, a good man, and a handsome man. I'll show you a picture.
I've seen the young pictures.
When he was a handsome man. I fell in love with him and I worked with him. He had curly hair, and he used to look like this here, straight like this here. When he used to go through the shop, everybody thought that God was going through. That's the way they were of him. And he was honest. And to him, nationality doesn't mean anything. He did work for everybody. He helped everybody. Once we had a business agent, I heard him say that. He died, Cagliostro. Italian fella. He said, you, Morris, had more Italian friends than I have. So help me God, I heard this here. Like that. And he was a friend to everybody. He was a friend of Rose's parents, the sisters, the whole family. He was a friend of everybody's. Their families. You saw the letter that you read, that he was a God to everybody. And he was a very handsome man and a good man. And honesty. He was honest. He was honest. And that's why everybody liked him. He has attraction. He was attracted to everybody.
Okay. I want to go back, if I can, and ask you a couple of things that I'm not sure of from a while ago. At what point were you an operator?
Is this going yet?
Yeah. At what point were you an operator instead of a hand worker? Where did you first start working on the tailoring?
I was doing armor basting, lining basting, shoulder basting.
Was that handwork?
That was all handwork.
Uh-huh.
Then, after the strike, I went into Harsh Effner Marx, worked for Morris that time when he was a steward. There, they taught me how to work on machine bottom color.
I see.
Balance.
So that was the time that you really started being an operator.
Bottom
selling,
yeah. And then when I got into to Sears and Roebuck, I was doing bottom selling, button sewing, everything on machines. button sewing and buttonholes, everything on machines. And then after, when I start to work in Barnes, again in Oak Park, when Marie left the shop, I worked on skirts on machine. And when I came to the State Street store, I knew every operation.
Okay.
And that time to be an operator was a big deal. It was a big deal to be an operator. Although they made the same money as the finishers. But I always had luck. Mr. Loftus gave me $10 more because I was a fast girl, a good girl, and he gave me $10 more.
You said that you were a trustee or you were on the board at Hogs?
This was when I started working in shop 5.
The pants shop.
In the pants shop, yeah. That was right after the strike. The union was a little bit enlarged, a little bit, not much. We lost the strike at that time. So they needed, they were just organizing a crew for the amalgamated. And they needed more people, shop people, to be hold some offices. So they made me as a trustee, second trustee. You know what it was, a second trustee? That is to control the union. We had three trustees, first and second and third. Checks, when they were signed in the union, the checks, the trustees had to sign it first. And then, like here, Brinzel, the manager of the organization, would sign it. Without the trustees, they couldn't issue a check.
To somebody that worked for the union?
That worked for the union, or they ought to buy something, let's say stationery, or they ought to buy something for the organization.
So there were just three of them in the city?
Three in the amalgamated at that time, from each local.
Oh, okay.
I imagine so.
So you were in from 144?
144, yeah. I was second trustee.
As long as you worked at Hearts?
As long as I worked at Hearts, yeah.
You were saying, Lottie, that one time you mentioned that it wasn't even that easy to work in a union shop, and one of the reasons you said that was that sometimes the women stole your bundles from you and stuff like that. Were there other things that happened that you can think of that made you say, that reminded you to say that?
No, that was the only time when... I said this before, but I read this in your other papers, summer we used to get work, it was harder to work, it was fine material. During the winter, like you buy a summer dress, it's a very fine material, it's harder to work on that because it was felling, so the stitches went through. And when we worked on winter material, we had a heavier material, it was much easier to work. So when you got a big bundle, you had more to work on. And we had a small bundle, small bundle, it was less work. So during the winter, they used to take away a heavier bundle. And when we had a heavier bundle during the summer, they used to take away the bundle that was easier to work. And I always remained, I didn't know the difference. So I always remained with a bundle that it's harder to work, so I made less, because it was piecework. I think it was a 50 cents a hundred or something like that.
I remember you saying once also, too, that, like at Shane's, when you first went on strike that you were mentioning, I think that there were no women cutters, that there were all men cutters.
Yeah.
There. And Marie was telling me once that they used to give all the money-making jobs to the men. Is that one of the, what was the cutter, or did they make good money? Is that why they were?
No, the cutters always made more money. In fact, they get more insurance and everything more. This was a men's work at that time, the cutters. Cutters was a men's work. No, a lot of women get in and men's work. I see all over. Men were doing it like in a bank. They had women tellers. Now they have men tellers too. Uh-huh. In places they had the men working. Now they had women working. But at that time, this was a man's work. And there were a lot of operating that it was men's work. But they also had women work. I heard not long ago by us that a woman was telling me that I worked with Max, and Max was doing the same work. And Max was making $1.80 an hour, and I was making $1 an hour. So I asked Max, how come you were making more? Because I said, did you work in the same shop? She said, yeah. So I asked Max, I said, how come Max, that she was making less, the same work as you, and you were making more money? So Max gave me the answer that she worked in a different shop, and that shop didn't pay more than she was getting. And then she came to work in downtown in his shop, because the company bought out her shop. So she went on the same pay that she was making before. That wasn't really right.
What were men's jobs and what were women's jobs? Why, you know, why was that the way it was? Is there a reason?
Men were sleeve sewers. Men were side sewers. You know, put in the sleeves, in the coats.
Why did they have those certain jobs?
That's the way it was for piecework. It was, I imagine that this was John Acomber having a lot of people, not non-skilled workers, and they needed the work, and they taught them it was easier to teach sections. One to make a sleeve, one make sleeve lining, one sew in the sleeve, one slow sides, one tell the lining, put in the lining. I think that's what it was made for.
But were there reasons that the men had those particular jobs?
Well, men had bigger jobs than the women at that time, and they made more money. Yeah.
Was that because they thought that they had families, or that's just the way it was?
That's the way it was. That's the way I found. Men sitting by the big jobs, and then women by the little jobs.
In the beginning, when they were just starting to come in with a lot of machines, were the men getting to be the operators first, and then the women were still hand finishers? Or?
Right. And then they took away like the lining sewing. You know, every coat has a lining in there. And so the women used to sew. I sewed linings once on machine too. But I was still getting the wages of the girls operator. They had section work. Yeah. Everything, one coat, I told you, they had a big ticket, one long ticket, and everything had a section ticket. A little ticket, they were about that small, they were about that tickets like this here. If you used to have books, this was the whole ticket. And it said on every operation, it said the what to do. And we used to take off those tickets, and we had a book, and we would put them in the book, and fill up a book with tickets. A little ticket like this. But there was one long ticket that we used to take off from the long ticket. Little tickets like that.
What kinds of, from when you were active during the strike, and then at the time that you came back in when you started working at Mendel's and yeah. Bonds, you know, when you first started working again, what were some of the changes that had taken place in the industry and some of the changes that had taken place in the union that you noticed when you came back?
Well, a lot of work was done by women that men did before. A lot of work was done by, especially in Mendel Brothers. Or even in the Boston store. That's why he got so mad at me, Charlie. Did I mention Charlie in the Boston store that he told the company that he saw me in the union?
Uh-huh.
Well, he did men's work, and sometimes the foreman would get me to do that. So he was jealous. And he didn't like me, of course. He thought maybe he would get a steady job over there, which he tried to get in there. And he was running after the foreman, and the foreman said, have you anything? So he was running here and running there. And without the foreman didn't even tell him to go to the machine. And he told him to go to the machine when he was doing handwork. And then he used to tell me to go to the machine. And he didn't like it that I was going to the machine. See?
Were more women coming into the industry, or were more women getting the skilled jobs, or...
No, the women were still doing handwork, finishing the coats, here the sides, and the collars finishing, and may sew buttons, and buttonholes made. But this was alteration, so we didn't have to make buttonholes. We came, sew over buttons, and fell into the pants. And operating, which I knew they operating from before, so I used to operate, and he was jealous of me why I operate the pants. He was jealous of me.
So it was just that more women were coming in, right?
More women were coming in. At that time, it was more women coming in to work. Like that woman that I was telling before that I worked in her in Bounds on Medicine Street. Her husband was a decorator, a painter. And she was a housewoman, and she was went to work to make a couple of dollars, and she couldn't even hold the needle in her hand. She used to pull the needle out like this.
And why do you think, was there a reason that they came in at that time?
Well, they needed work. It was that time. They needed work. They needed work.
Where they had been able to get by. Before.
I suppose, yeah. She was a very cool woman. Now they are rich. The same woman is a very rich woman now. Her husband happened to buy a home, and he made a lot of money, and he sold it. And they're very rich. They bought a car. They're very rich.
When was the clothing industry really big in Chicago, and when did it start to dwindle?
When did it start what?
When did it start to dwindle? When did the shops start closing? When was it real big in Chicago, and when did it start to leave?
Well, it was in the, way in the, I could say in the third, between the end of the 30s and 40s, they start to leave Chicago. Like Morris served 25 years in Detroit, and at that time, a big company moved out to Lansing because they could have gotten they got their people cheaper help, farmers and so on.
So it was around the end of the 30s.
And the amalgamated ran after them. Morris was close there to Lansing from Detroit, and he sent in a group, and he told them, he said, you can't run away from the union. You'll have to have a shower. But with the union, they had cheaper than here in Chicago. Because everything was cheaper over there. Labor was cheaper over there. Then another shop moved out, Hart Scheffner Paint Shop moved out. But Morris was not in there. They didn't ask Morris. Morris was sick at that time. Mm-hmm. Morris said if they would ever ask him, he wouldn't allow that shop to move out. They would never permit Hart Scheffner to move out. But Morris was sick that time. And they didn't ask him, and they moved out. Somebody else gave them the permission. They moved out in, I think in Indiana. What's it, Hines? You know Hines? Hines is there, the manager over there. Hines, yeah. That shop was a big shop. High shop. Then Rosie lost her job because Rosie worked with her sister. And also at the same time, I should not mention that.
Oh, that's all right. Okay.
She was a button sewer, and she lost her job, so they didn't have another job. She always complained that she was sick. Her legs bothered her, her eyes bothered her, which she has bad eyes, it's true. And Morris worked out that she should go back and work with her sister. And her sister was doing, that time, too, they sat in the zippers. So she was, they had to make flies, and they discontinued something over there. And he worked out that she should go and help her sister. But her sister was really the worker. Her sister was a good worker. And they worked together. So that was the sign. And then when the shop moved out, the paint shop moved out, so there was just a group of people that they needed immediate work. They couldn't close up. It was almost time that they were going to close up the shop altogether. But the union didn't allow that, something like that. And they left part of the shop they left. But they didn't need so many people to work there. So at that time they had a ladies' department too. I think they had a contract for stewardess or something to work uniforms. And it all went into work in that department, in the ladies' department. Because it wasn't enough for two people or three people. I don't know how many people were worked with Brothers Lynn Lena.
Lottie, I want to go way back again once more. Yeah. You were mentioning once that Blanco, the guy that used to take you out, Blanco, that used to take you out to the, once in a while
after
for coffee and stuff during
the strike. After the strike, yeah.
That he wanted to take you to New York at one time?
To Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Yeah. And he said he was going to send me to school there and he's going to give me a good job.
Did he get to know you real well at the strike or what was
going
on?
Yeah, he got to know me real well during the strike, yeah. And he was very friendly. Did Irene mention anything about this, that he used to take us for dinner? And did she mention that? She didn't mention?
Yeah.
She used to take us, he used to take us for lunch. I never wanted to go with him. But Irene used to go. I was hungry in the morning. I used to come. I used to run away very early when my aunt was sleeping yet. And that's all she gave me, is 10 cents for a carpet. It was only 5 cents carpet. And she used to come in and say, Lottie, did you eat anything today? And she had a poor house herself and she had a big family. You know, she gave you the history.
Yeah.
And she said, no. She said, wait a minute, I'll find somebody that'll take us for coffee and cigarettes. And she went up to Mr. Blanco and said, Mr. Blanco, Lottie didn't eat anything yet. And so on. So he used to take us both to that restaurant. He used to take us there where I showed you today. Mm-hmm. That was near the headquarters. He used to take us to eat. And then he took me many times for dinner to eat together. But and then towards the end of the strike, we had from the workman circle, it was a New Year's Eve, I think. It was New Year's Eve, or whatever it was an evening. We had a dance in the Coliseum. Do you know where the Coliseum is? On Wabash Avenue, is it still on the Coliseum, still there?
I
doubt. So how do you know about the Coliseum?
I didn't miss the same one.
Where did you?
I was thinking of that on them.
Where's the Coliseum? Is there another
Coliseum? It's not the auditorium I was thinking of.
Well, it was on Wabash Avenue between State or State? It was on Wabash Avenue, I believe.